could you please introduce yourself and the group that you are a part of, the Palestine Media Collective?
My name is Gordon Murray, and my partner and I, Carol Moiseevich, and I formed the Palestine Media Collective after we went to Palestine with the International Solidarity Movement in November 2006. And we went to Nablus in the northern West Bank to help with the olive harvest in 2006 because the olive harvest is one of the cornerstones of the Palestinian economy, where there's so much repression of the Palestinian economy that the olive oil has become ever more important. Anyway, I mean, a lot of these olive groves that we were working in hadn't been picked for 5 years or more because of either repression or threats from settlers and Israeli soldiers. At one place we were picking, a farmer had been killed. Another place, you know, they'd been severely beaten and so on. So we were there for a month, and we helped out with the olive harvest and saw exactly what was happening on the ground in the West Bank with the repression from the settlers and from the Israeli army. And when we came back, and we were aware, obviously, had been aware of the situation before and had been aware that the media in Canada and Vancouver specifically didn't cover the situation fairly. But having just been there, it was even more of a shock to see the way the Middle East in general and Israel-Palestine conflict in particular was covered. And in Vancouver, I'm not sure if you're aware, but it's essentially a Can-West one-news town. They own both the daily newspapers, by far the market-leading newscast on TV, and plus all the string of community weeklies, newspapers. They also own the TV station and newspaper in Victoria and so on. So basically, 70% of the news in Vancouver is controlled by Can-West, and it's very hard to get information that's accurate and unbiased about what's happening in Israel and Palestine. So that's we decided to form the Palestine Media Collective in order to monitor the media here and hopefully you know, take some direct action. So that was the first major project that we did, was to produce a parody of the Vancouver Sun, which is the paper of record here in Vancouver. We felt that a parody was really the only way to deal with the issue, because there's so little competition here in Vancouver in the news. So we produced a parody that had articles like, "Study shows the truth is biased against Israel." So it was satirical articles just pointing out the bias in Can-West and the Vancouver Sun.
How many copies, and how did you distribute the parody?
Well, we printed 12,000 copies of the parody, and we handed them out on June 7th, 2007, which was the 40th anniversary of the Israeli military occupation of the West Bank, Gaza Strip, East Jerusalem, and Golan Heights. So we chose that date as a significant date, and the articles, some of the articles referred to that, because the main headline was celebrating 40 years of bringing civilization to the West Bank. Anyway, we printed 12,000 copies, and a number of local activists went out on the streets and handed them out to commuters at bus stops and rapid transit.
Okay, and how did you expect the Sun to respond, and how did the Vancouver Sun actually respond, or Can-West respond?
Well, they did publish a response in the newspaper the next day, I believe, from the publisher, Kevin Bent, saying that, you know, they felt this crossed the line, and they took it very seriously, and they were going to explore all legal avenues, and that we had stolen their brand and engaged in identity theft and blah blah blah. So they definitely started rattling their sabers right away, but we assumed that it was just bluff and bluster, and that, you know, and that they wanted to make a point, but we didn't really expect them to follow through on it. And I should also mention that we had done the action anonymously. I mean, we did it under the name of the Palestine Media Collective, but we didn't. We decided to keep the focus on the issues rather than the individuals that were doing it, that it was best to do it anonymously. And also because we knew that obviously Can West is very litigious, and there was a possibility of a lawsuit. So that just, you know, would help that with that issue as well. Anyway, 6 months after the parody came out, there was nothing after that first article. There was nothing for 6 months. And then in December of 2007, they issued a writ of summons and statement of claim, which named a local Palestinian activist and a local printer, independent printer, and six Jane Does and six John Does. And it was it's quite an interesting document, because although it was claiming that this was a trademark issue, that their trademark had been violated, the writ of summons itself, their legal filing, the trademark was only mentioned a couple of times, whereas there was numerous paragraphs, like half a dozen, which said things like, I've got a quote here from one of them: "Each of the defendants is involved directly or indirectly in anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian media activities. Further, the defendants or some of them harbor antagonistic views towards the plaintiff, its principal shareholders, and the reporting and editorial opinions expressed in the plaintiff's publications, including the Vancouver Sun." So it was quite clear from the writ that it was a political, you know, that this lawsuit was about the politics.
And it's pretty funny, too, because essentially the parody was a response to Can West's very pro-Israel content.
There's plenty of documentation of stories that have been spiked, columns that have been rejected because they didn't toe the pro-Israeli line of Can West Media, and in fact the Montreal Gazette was quoted as saying, "We don't publish opinions that are critical of Israel and its actions in the Middle East." So it's very clear that they're pro-Israel. They make no bones about it. And so we wanted to provide a little balance by essentially injecting some humor in the debate and talking about their pro-Israeli bias, and also there was some analysis serious analysis of what the situation is like and the effect of media concentration on this debate. To back up a little bit, I just one of the things that I wanted to say to give people a bit of an overview is that the case is really quite fascinating, because it brings together a lot of different issues, this legal case. I mean, I think it's clear from the political statements in the writ that it is a slap suit, that, you know, that a large corporation is trying to shut down its critics and stifle dissent over its policies. Normally under a trademark action, there would have to be some sort of financial damages that they were trying to recover. You know, if somebody is selling knockoffs of Nike shoes, they're making money off of Nike's brand. But in this case, A, we gave it away for free, and B, it wasn't a commercial venture in any sense. It was purely an expression of free speech. It also brings up a lot of issues that are unresolved in the Canadian legal system.
Canada doesn't have any satire or parody protection in its law, but maybe you can help me out with this. I was also reading that the Supreme Court said in June of 2008 that I quote, "The law must accommodate commentators such as the satirists and cartoonists who exercise a demographic right to poke fun at those who huff and puff in the public arena," end quote. Well, this is a slap suit. For those who do not know what a slap suit is, it stands for strategic lawsuit against public participation. So there is this huge hole in most Canadian provinces. So that leads me to, what grounds are you defending yourself on now?
Well, yeah, there's a number of aspects to it, because, as you said, there's no anti-slap legislation in Canada. 25 of the U.S. states have it to prevent this kind of action from occurring, of corporations trying to shut down a public debate on issues of critical importance to democracy and public discourse. So that's one aspect of it. Because there are no anti-slap statutes in Canada, specifically in BC, because it's a provincial jurisdiction, we can't argue that aspect of it. Now, the other one which we were alluding to is the parody and satire, and Canada is almost alone in the G8 in that it doesn't have any protection, or I would say any establishment of the right to parody and satire in its copyright regime. The U.S. does, France does, Australia does, Britain does. Basically, all the G8 countries have that. In Canada, the only way you can use copyright rated material is if you get the permission from the copyright holder, and obviously the Vancouver Sun isn't going to give us permission to use their own logos to mock them and satirize them. There is, however, in Canadian law, there is one aspect called fair dealing, which is somewhat similar to fair use in the States, well established that parody is part of fair use. In Canada, fair dealing has always been interpreted very narrowly, and there's a case which is often cited, one of the few cases where parody has actually been tested, from the mid-90s, where a union was striking, the CAW was striking against Michelin, and they produced a flyer with the Michelin man having his boot on the face of a worker, and a federal court, not the Supreme Court, but a federal court actually ruled that was infringing Michelin's copyright, and the union didn't have the right to use the Michelin man in any shape or form. That the copyright holder's property rights superseded the union's right to freedom of expression. So that's been kind of seen as a big step back for parody in Canada, but that decision has in fact been significantly weakened, if not overturned, by a Supreme Court decision in 2004, which stated that, kind of the obvious, that copyright is a balance between the rights of users and the rights of producers, and that users' rights, such as fair dealing, should be interpreted broadly. That gives us what some people call the parody defense, where we can argue that the parody that we produced was, in a sense, using the Vancouver Sun's trademark and copyright to criticize it, because criticism is one of the uses that's allowed under fair dealing. And in the past, that's only been, interpreted to mean like literary criticism in textbooks and things like that.
I think it's pretty important also to mention that I have read the parody online, and there is no way that anybody who happened to pick up this parody would mistake it for an original copy of the Vancouver Sun, now is there?
Yeah, well, that goes to the trademark issue of what they call confusion. What the Vancouver Sun is arguing is that we were trying to use the Vancouver Sun logo in order to make people more likely to, first of all, confuse them that this was the real Vancouver Sun, and second of all, to make them more likely to believe what we were saying, because it had the the imprimatur of the Vancouver Sun. They claim that, you know, people will believe things like a weather report of missile showers in the afternoon is factually true just because the Vancouver Sun logo appears at the top of the newspaper, which seems a little bit absurd. Anyway, and on and on and on. So it's obvious it's a parody. It's obvious it's satirical.
And it's also pretty obvious that CanWest is bringing you to court just to drain you of money and funds and time and...
Yeah, and that's the function of a slap suit. The strategic lawsuit against public participation is not necessarily to win the case. 90% of the time, the corporations filing slap suits don't win the actual legal judgment, but you just grind down your... You know, they have essentially infinite resources compared to us, although one might say that
they're starting.
That's a whole other aspect is CanWest's current financial position. But even with their stock down to 30 cents, they still have relatively large resources compared to us to hire lawyers. And so they can string out the process as long as possible and essentially tie us up in lawsuits for years, and which detracts from our ability to organize around issues and obviously wears down our time and energy. So that's the point of slap suits.
I'd like to ask you on a personal note, how is this affecting your mental toll?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's a roller coaster ride, I guess you'd say. I mean, you know, it's an important issue. Both in the public terms of the debate around Israel and Palestine and the debate around media concentration, media bias, corporate control of information. So those are, I mean, they're all issues that we've been working on and that are very important to us. So, there are times where we feel like it's a really important fight and that I think in the end, we can win this fight. But then, you know, when you just have the process is very, very difficult. The legal process grinds very slowly and grinds you down. Essentially, that's what it does. It is hard to keep the energy going, and that's really where the public campaign becomes important, as well as the legal issues. And we do have a defense committee that's been really good at raising money and for our legal defense, as well as putting on public events. And we've been trying to get the word out on a grassroots level. And there's been a lot of support from the blogosphere and from various groups, a lot of civil liberties groups, including the Ligue de Droit et Liberté in Quebec, have written support letters, and BC Civil Liberties and Pen Canada, which supports writers that are having their freedom of expression challenged, and the Canadian Library Association. So a lot of groups and individuals are supporting us, despite all the important issues here of freedom of expression, public debate on Israel, Palestine, copyright reform, all of these important issues that are brought in by this case. The mainstream media has been completely derelict in covering it.
And it's important to make mention here too that you and your group have contacted the CBC and other news outlets. Can you give us some examples of how CanWest is kind of squashing this story?
Yeah, well, we have a whole section on our website called the Media Chill, where we detail some of the incidents. I just mentioned the website of the Defense Committee because there's a lot of information on there. It's seriouslyfreespeech.ca, and there's all of the legal information, including the original writ, our defense statements, some of the McCarthy-esque questions that that CanWest lawyers have asked, who was involved in which group, and we want their names and addresses and blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of information on there, on the website. But specifically about the media chill, I mean, we didn't, admittedly, no one would really expect CanWest to cover it themselves because it's not in their interest. They want to keep this, you know, they want to keep it, this case as low a profile as possible because they claim to be defenders of free speech and they often wrap themselves in the mantle of free speech defenders. We do expect that other national and certainly local media outlets would cover it. And there's a few cases with the CBC, as you mentioned. I mean, we've had people both inside and outside the CBC, producers, journalists who are interested in the story and have pitched it and have not been able to get anyone at the CBC to cover it. And the same with the Toronto Star and even the local, you know, those free publications like Metro, and there's another one here in Vancouver called 24 Hours. One of their high-profile columnists pitched the story, and the editor refused to cover it. But just specifically on the CBC, there was one bizarre incident, which I call the curious case of Q, which is Q is the national arts program on CBC mm-hmm. Radio 1 with John Giomeschi. And in November of 2008, a group called the Yes Men, along with a lot of progressive groups in the States, produced a parody of the New York Times. And they claimed to have printed over 1 million of these and distributed them all across the U.S. And they used the exact New York Times logo and layout, similar as we did with the Vancouver Sun. And it got huge coverage, both in the U.S. and in Canada, the CBC, the Toronto Star, Globe and Mail, National Post, all of them covered this story of the New York Times parody and the Yes Men. And so this was one of the angles that we tried to pitch our story on to both CBC and all of the other media. You know, here's the New York Times parody. The New York Times responded by saying, you know, this is April Fool's come early, and the only real complaint we have about it is that it's not as funny as previous spoofs. Whereas, obviously, CanWest responded very differently to our parody, our spoof edition. They immediately, you know, set the legal wheels in motion and are trying to shut us down and sue us out of existence. So there's some interesting comparisons and between the two stories. And so we tried to pitch that to CBC and specifically to Q because, you know, it's a hip national arts program and we thought it might be something that they would want to talk about, compare and contrast parody and satire in Vancouver or in Canada and the U.S. So we had sent that email to them shortly after the New York Times parody came out to the Q and the host. And then lo and behold, five or six days later, they did a story about the New York Times parody. But despite our suggestions, they did not mention our parody. They did a full 20-minute interview with one of the Yes Men who had produced the New York Times parody. And as it happened that we had also emailed the Yes Men to say, you know, congratulations and here's what we've done and what's happened to us. And so one of the Yes Men who was being interviewed by John Giomeschi on Q mentioned the fact that there had been this different reaction in Vancouver, that CanWest had sued the people behind a similar parody edition. And the Q host not only didn't respond to that, he just literally started talking over the Yes Men,
wow.
Andy Bickelman from the Yes Men, and continued on with the interview as if he hadn't heard what he had said.
Now, it's pretty interesting to me that you're using like media critique as a form of direct action. And I guess it's maybe hard to say because now the parody newspaper is wrapped up with the court case, but what was your initial feel for the success of the parody paper? Did it accomplish what you had wanted it to?
Well, you can never tell exactly what you accomplish, but I mean the reason for doing a direct action like this and using a parody is because I've worked in the alternative media and here in Vancouver, and it's all very small scale, and it's all talking to the same, you know, 10,000 people that pick up a left-wing alternative publication here right. in Vancouver, and it's very hard to get outside that what you call preaching to the converted. And so one of the important aspects of this kind of public intervention into the mainstream public sphere is to get the information out beyond people who know about the issues and get people who wouldn't normally think about things like media concentration and the bias in the coverage of Israel-Palestine to at least have these issues brought up to them so they have a chance to think about them. Obviously, it struck a nerve somewhere at Karen West.
Right. So in a sense, it is an accomplishment as well, because as the case progresses, we hope perhaps that the public will become at least more aware of the case as it drags on for years and years.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the double-edged sword for a media organization, especially, you know, that's trying to squelch free speech, is that there should be open to charges of hypocrisy and, you know, and being a bully, beating up on individual activists that are just trying to get the word out in a small way. And one would think that this was a good story for the media to cover, even if for people like the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail and CBC, even if they're only covering it for their own selfish purposes of being able to criticize a competitor, you'd think it's an interesting enough story that you'd think they'd pick it up. So one would hope that this legal action will get the story out further, and it certainly has to a certain extent. I mean, so the word is spreading, but at this point, it's still very much on the grassroots level, and I guess that's not surprising.
Nope.
Given the issues of things like media concentration and intellectual property, and of course, the big one being Israel-Palestine, which none of the media in Canada really wants to talk about.
No, and maybe that comes, how does all this relate now to the University of Ottawa and Carleton, who are having similar debates on campus regarding Israel-Palestine issues?
That's one of the ways that we describe this case at all the public events, is it's not something that's just happened in isolation or just because Can West is particularly litigious. It's part of the context is that it's part of a larger campaign internationally to shut down and limit the debate on Israel and Palestine. And that has played out very strongly in the academic community in particular, but in North America, it certainly extends to the media, where I don't know if you remember, but Israel shelled two UN schools where refugees from the fighting had been, you know, trying to find a safe haven, and the 44 civilians at these two UN schools were killed by Israeli shelling, obviously unarmed, and obviously it was a violation of all the rules of war and so on and so forth, and it became quite a big story internationally. But here in Vancouver, our paper of record, the Vancouver Sun, I actually picked up the Vancouver Sun on January 7th just to see how they would cover this. Finally, on B6, there was a story, and the headline was, "Pressure Mounts for Ceasefire in Gaza." And that was how they covered the shelling of UN schools by Israeli tanks. We were referring to the larger campaign to shut down the debate on Israel and Palestine. And that there's been a lot recently in the news about Israel Apartheid Week on campuses in Canada, and the use by the administrations, both at Carleton and at the University of Ottawa, of kind of labyrinthine and bizarre administrative regulations to try and suppress the free speech of students. So they claimed that they had advice that the Israeli Apartheid Week poster might contravene the Human rights code in Ontario, and so therefore they forced it to be withdrew. And this is not, again, it's not isolated. Last year, the same thing happened at McMaster University, where the administration tried to ban the use of the phrase Israeli apartheid on McMaster campus during Israeli Apartheid Week. And as you probably know, Ignatieff and Jason, Michael Ignatieff, the leader of the opposition, and Jason Kenney, the Minister for Immigration and so on, are on the record as saying that the use of the phrase Israeli apartheid is anti-Semitic. And so the debate in Canada is very, very skewed. What they want to talk about, which is the suicide bombers and the rockets, that Israel as a victim. And if you look at any of the statistics, it just doesn't hold water.
To get back to your case, what is what's going on currently with you?
Well, I mean, so far we haven't gone to trial yet. It's all been, you know, the preliminary motions, and we have had some setbacks in the way the case is framed, because based on that original writ of summons that I quoted to you, where Ken West was talking about our political activities, and we essentially argued in our defense that the context of this parody, the media bias, the media concentration in Vancouver, and the shutting down of debate on Israel and Palestine, specifically at Ken West, was relevant to this case. That context informed the parody and the issues of freedom of expression and that we were trying to bring forward in the case. However, so far, what Ken West has done is, as we filed these defenses, they have cut out as much as possible of all of the political statements in their statement of claim, which they're allowed to do. So they've now tried to narrow it down to being purely a trademark and copyright issue. So that means that the case has been narrowed down to more of the technical issues of copyright and trademark, which we discussed earlier. So obviously our defense is that this parody was allowable under the criticism clause of the fair dealing in Canadian copyright, and then we've argued further that if a judge says that it's not allowable under that clause, then because this is an important freedom of speech issue, then that clause of the trademark should be struck down, and we should be allowed to express our views on an important issue of public debate. So that's where it stands right now. Mention one other thing, and that's kind of interesting.
Sure.
I mean, part of what we've been trying to talk about with the other media is, like, why is Ken West involved in this case? And now it becomes even more of an issue. You know, Ken West has issued memos because of their financial problems, to asking employees to cut back on muffins at meetings and to limit the number of photocopies they make. Yet for some reason, they're willing to squander hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees on a vanity lawsuit, which they have. I mean, there's no damages, so there's no way that they can ever, you know, it makes no financial sense whatsoever for them to be suing us.
Right.
So, again, that's something that we've tried to pitch to the media in Canada, the business media. Like, why are they able to continue to engage in these frivolous lawsuits that's costing them hundreds of thousands of dollars when they're laying off hundreds of journalists? It's so absurd and hypocritical. So, there is a possibility if Ken West goes into bankruptcy that would be the end of the case, because they can no longer carry it forward if they're in bankruptcy protection. That's one aspect of it. I mean, it would be a strange way for it to end up. But
yeah. Maybe finally, how could people find out more information or support you?
Well, and yeah, we've mentioned it a couple of times. Especially obviously for people in Montreal, they can't come out to public events here, but they can go to the website, which is seriouslyfreespeech.ca of the Legal Defense Committee. And you can, if you want to make donations to the Legal Defense, you can do it right there through PayPal. You can also, there's also an address where you can send checks for people who want to contribute monetarily. But really, getting the word out is the most important thing. We need people to know about this case. So tell your friends, find out more about it. Tell your friends about it. It is a significant threat to freedom of expression for this case, this lawsuit, to all Canadians, and especially all progressive people and activists. Because if CanWest can get away with suing people for their political opinions and successfully win a lawsuit on that basis, then anyone who expresses an opinion that's not, you know, that's not one of the status quo is under threat from legal action from major corporations, whether it's about the environment, and that's another, and I know that's another slap suit that's ongoing in Quebec right now, is over the reporting of the mining mm-hmm. in Africa. So there's a lot of issues where corporations don't want the public to know, and they don't want activists to talk about things. So it's important that people work together to defeat CanWest on this, and we appreciate any support that people can give.
So thank you very much. We were speaking with Gordon Murray of the Palestine Media Collective.